This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, give language the ride of its life. This time last year, Radiotopia and PRX were holding what turned out to be the biggest ever journalism campaign in Kickstarter history. And thanks to the incredible generosity of you listeners, they raised enough money to add more shows to the collective, including this one, and I could not be more grateful. To be able to make this show and to have you people choosing to listen to it, that has been the greatest joy of my whole career. And soon we're going to be asking you to get involved again to help us make Radiotopia stronger and better and bigger than ever. You can find out everything on the 19th of October at radiotopia.fm. A month of Radiotopian fun is about to commence. And throughout, The Allusionist is going to be coming out every week. And in each episode, I'll be teaming up with another Radiotopian. First up to the plate is this guy.
This is The Allusionist. I'm Roman Mars.
The man without whom there would be no Radiotopia at all. A while ago, Roman tweeted the following: I would totally listen to an ongoing radio series comprised solely of the stories behind eponyms. Firstly, I thought, what's an eponym? Eponym, noun, a word or name derived from the name of a person, or a person after whom a discovery, invention, place, etc. is named. Secondly, I wondered what it was about eponyms that got Roman so excited.
An eponym, just almost by definition, has some kind of story. Even if it isn't the origin story, it has something where it got the eponym attached to it, which is a good enough story to be retold. And so for that reason, I kind of love them, and it sort of starts a good conversation, I think. That's what I love about eponyms. I've always liked silhouette because I think it's a little bit of a slur, if I have this right. The idea, like real elaborate painting portraiture was in fashion. Silhouette was the head of the French treasury, was cutting back into a sort of their version of austerity. And that's right at the time when outline drawings were becoming in fashion, which are clearly not as elaborate, didn't require an artist, didn't require months of time. And so that type of a portrait was a la silhouette, like a really like stripped down, simple, didn't require real skill. And I love that because it's a bit of a slight at the same time as being descriptive. And so I love those ones like that.
Well, if you like silhouette, Roman, you're probably going to love Bowdlerization, after the English editor Thomas Bowdler, who in 1818 released a version of Shakespeare's plays that he'd reworked to make them more suitable for women and children, as in he'd taken out all of the naughty bits and foul language. So Lady Macbeth doesn't even say her famous line, out, out, damn spot anymore, but out, crimson spot, as if she's in a laundry detergent advert. To be fair, Bowdler's edition was actually a huge success and brought Shakespeare to a much wider audience, but his name does now stand for cack-handed expurgation.
When it comes to word origins, an eponym is the surest bet that you're going to get a good story out of it. That's what I love about them.
So and it's taken me this long to realize that.
I know. What is your problem? I told you from the very beginning it should just be an eponym show. Yeah. So I love them. So you should start. Do a regular one every 6 weeks. Do an eponym.
I'll see. I'll see how this one goes.
Yeah.
I'm going to start small with some eponymous items you're probably all familiar with. You might be holding one right now. The Bic and the Biro. I chose these for the first eponyms attempt because I thought they're in the spirit of both Roman's show 99% Invisible, which examines a lot of commonplace objects, and of this one, because this is a show about words, and what is stationary without words, and words without stationary.
Stationary is the physical structure of words.
That is James Ward, author of Adventures in Stationery, A Journey Through Your Pencil Case. So James knows a lot about ballpoint pens, which we might casually refer to as biros or bics.
I guess what's kind of interesting is that for lots of people, they're just one thing. So people will say a bic biro.
And is that controversial?
It's kind of odd in the same way as you... I mean, you wouldn't say, I'm going to have a can of Pepsi Coke. Or I suppose you might say, I just bought a new Dyson Hoover.
Yeah.
Would you? I guess it's when one brand or name becomes the generic and the other one remains the specific.
How do you think biro managed to become the generic?
Laszlo Biro, he didn't invent the ballpoint, but he kind of perfected it.
The invention of the ballpoint, going by a patent filed in 1888, is credited to John J. Loud, who had a great name for a product, but not a good pen, which left room for Laszlo Biro to swoop in and claim ballpoint victory. Born in Budapest in 1899, Laszlo Biro had been variously a medical student, a stage hypnotist, an insurance salesman, a race car driver, and eventually he became a journalist, which was what he was working as in the early 1930s when he invented the pen that would make his name, and indeed take his name.
And apparently one day he was in the print room and the heat of the machinery caused his fountain pen to leak, and so he wanted to develop an alternative way of creating a pen that didn't leak due to the heat and pressure. And he saw the way that the cylindrical print presses rolled the ink onto the page. And so he thought, oh, if only you could have like a miniature version of those. But the problem is that a cylinder can only roll in forwards and backwards, whereas when you're writing, it needs to roll in all directions. And the story that is almost certainly not true, but is frequently told, is he was sitting in a cafe looking out of the window trying to make sense of how you'd make a cylinder roll in all the directions. And it had been raining outside and there were some kids playing with marbles, and one of them rolled a marble through a puddle, and then he saw the sort of line of water that the marble made on the pavement, and then he suddenly realised, oh, well, a ball rolls in all directions. I mean, that seems quite obvious that a ball rolls in all directions. Like, all ball games are based on that principle.
Yeah.
But it took him, these children playing with marbles, for him to make the connection. And he had, like, this weird experience. I think he was, like, checking into a hotel, and he signed in using his prototype pen. And the guy next to him kind of saw the pen and was like, oh, that's rather interesting. Tell me about your pen.
It's not the best pickup line. But that passing pen enthusiast turned out to be the former president of Argentina, visiting Europe to promote trade links. So in due course, Laszlo Biro moved to Argentina to grow his pen empire. Penpire?
These kind of stories that they had these prototype pens and they'd take them to meetings to try and get investors. And Laszlo would be doing all of the talking, and his colleague would be under the table. He'd be like, because some of the pens worked and some of the pens didn't. And so he'd get out a little scrap of paper and he'd be sort of like scribbling on the bit of paper to try and get the pen to work. And if it started working, then he'd go, oh, and here's a sample. Whereas if it didn't start working, then he'd give him a signal and Laszlo would be like, unfortunately, we don't have any prototypes with us, but we'll come like next time we come.
So biros were a bit rubbish.
They had lots of problems that they had to resolve. They had to find an ink that was viscous enough that it wouldn't leak out, but then not so thick that it would clog or jam. They had to find a way that you could keep it in like a jacket pocket and it wouldn't overheat and make the pen leak. So once they cracked it, then other people were able to come along and go, oh, this is great. So Biro teams up with Henry Martin. He was involved in like the aeronautics industry in the UK, because he needed, in order to make the pens, you need ball bearings, or very, very fine ball bearings, and the aviation industry makes the best ball bearings. And then, I mean, this is during the Second World War at this point, but they started manufacturing these ballpoint pens, and they gave them to the RAF, because if you're flying really high and you need to write down air coordinates or whatever, you want a pen that's not going to leak because of the air pressure. And these pens worked.
Hooray! But it wasn't all smooth rolling thenceforth. There was a lot of competition, albeit mostly rubbish. In the United States, a man called Milton Reynolds wanted to be the first to launch a ballpoint in that country.
Yeah, the Reynolds International, and it was described as this kind of atomic age super pen.
He didn't actually put in much effort to make the super pen a super pen. He just wanted to be the first to market, so everyone bought his pen.
He was a kind of opportunistic huckster. He kind of just rushed out this pen, which caused like a sensation at the time. When it first launched in New York, there were just crowds, like thousands of people lining the streets.
It's like mental mania for pens.
Yeah, or, you know, when there's like a new iPhone or something. It was like that, but for pens. It was crappy, and it came with a guarantee that if it broke within 2 years, then they'd replace it, and they just had to replace hundreds of thousands of these things. In the US, that created the market for the ballpoint, but it also then nearly killed it off because people had this terrible experience with these bad, bad pens.
But then another major ballpoint player entered the fray, a manufacturer of fountain pens who kept getting inquiries for ballpoint pen parts, Marcel Bic, spelt B-I-C-H. But for his eponymous pen, he dropped the H, so that you wouldn't think the Bic crystal was pronounced Bich or Bitch or any other way than Bic.
This was after the war that the Bics came along, and they licensed the technology from Biro. There were these very complicated legal battles where each party kept suing the other one because they claimed the infringement. And Miles Martin, which was the UK company that Biro was involved with, they were suing Bic, and there was all of these complications. And then sort of with Richard Curtis' romantic comedy Inevitability, Henry Martin, who ran Miles Martin company, and his son married the daughter of Marcel Bic. So
it's real Romeo and Juliet stuff.
Yeah, but you can imagine that it must have been tricky when they're choosing which pen to sign the marriage certificate with.
Maybe they just went for a pencil.
Yeah. Bic grew and grew and grew.
And how did they manage that?
Because that particular pen, the Bic crystal, the one that everyone refers to as the Bic Biro, with its, you know, hexagonal body and its familiar cap with the hole in the end, and that particular pen just works.
So it's meritocracy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something like, I think, half of all ballpoint pens that are sold in the world every day are Bic crystals. So if you think how many other millions of types of ballpoints that there are, like there's supermarket or own brand versions.
Got this one I stole from a hotel.
Yeah,
there's I'm almost ashamed to show it to you.
Stolen hotel. The Bic crystal just works, and there's one in the permanent collection of the Museum of Modern Art in New York. I don't know if it's necessarily always on display, but they've got it in their collection somewhere.
You have to ask.
Yeah, you have to book ahead.
You have to pay $20 to see a pen that you could buy for 50 cents.
Yeah, but it's a different experience.
Let's take a little etymology break. Pen and pencil may share a syllable, but don't let that dupe you into thinking they have a common linguistic origin. Pen derives from the Latin penna, which meant feather. So saying quill pen is a tautology, good to know. Pencil, meanwhile, came from the Latin for a painter's brush, penicillus, a diminutive of paniculus, which meant little tail. And the Latin for tail is also where we get the word penis. Anyway, back to pens and how their development influenced the development of writing itself.
The ability to make marks more precisely means that you're able to make more complex marks. So if all you have is a bit of stick and a clay tablet, you can only produce quite basic script. So like cuneiform is quite angular. But then if you start using like a reed brush on papyrus, that offers you more flexibility. And then if you start using, instead of papyrus, which is quite rough, if you use parchment or vellum, which is extremely smooth, and you use a quill, which is very flexible, then you're able to produce extremely beautiful, like illustrated texts or illuminated texts. And so with those developments, it means that the characters that you're able to produce are more easy to distinguish. So you're able to have more characters, and so you're able to produce writing, which is more complex, I suppose.
My school would only let us use fountain pens. We were not allowed to write with ballpoints. And this seems to have been quite a common attitude towards ballpoints for a long time. A fountain pen can produce thick lines, thin lines, flourishes, and thus invest your handwriting with a lot of character and flair. But the ball in a ballpoint produces a line of uniform thickness. So a lot of people believed that the pens were detrimental to handwriting.
Laszlo's daughter, she said, her father would often respond to these complaints. And he used to hear people say that the ballpoint was ruining writing skills. And he'd smile and say, well, if writing comes from the heart, if we can help the hand to perform the task, what is so wrong with that? And I think there's nothing wrong with that. Well done, Laszlo Biro.
I think it's interesting that their names are on products that are extremely successful, but also disposable.
Yeah, and also they are kind of disposable in that you can know what a Bic is or you can know what a Biro is, but you don't need to know who Marcel is or who Laszlo is. So they've kind of made this disposable contribution to history, and in the same way they've made themselves disposable.
So if your eponymous product is successful, your involvement in it, and even your own identity, is subsumed, which might not sit that well with the kind of people who put their names on things, because calling something after yourself seems like quite an egomaniacal choice to me.
I mean, I may be wrong, but my impression is a lot of eponyms are not the person naming them after themselves. It's more been assigned by another person.
So it's like a mark of respect.
Yeah.
Do you think that people who've got a disease or horrible medical condition named after them, that's quite a sad way to be remembered, isn't it?
I don't know. It depends, because if you're a researcher, you've probably gotten past the feeling of grossness around disease, and you probably just enjoy the fact that you were instrumental in its discovery or successful treatment. So I have a feeling that I could even live with a horrible disease being named after me.
Yeah, but then you'd have people who only remembered you because you're what killed their grandma. And you feel good about that.
Yeah. Just be remembered. I think that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter what it's for.
That's what serial killers are banking on.
Yeah. And they're right.
Happy birthday, Roman, and thanks. I imagine that most of you already listen to Roman's show 99% Invisible, but if not, fill your ears with it right now. Oh, you're so lucky to have all that ahead of you. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is jakery, noun, a communal uprising or revolt. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. Thanks to Martin Austwick for the music and editorial help, and to Seth and Allison for letting Roman and me record in their Wendy house. James Ward's book Adventures in Stationery is out now. In the US, it was published as The Perfection of the Paperclip, Curious Tales of Invention, Accidental Genius, and Stationery Obsession, so search for that instead if you're there. This book will transform the way you think about paperclips and staplers and sticky tape. You can find me at Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter, and at theallusionist.org, where I'll be back next week with another Radiotopisode.